recruiting enthusiasts. I'm Priyanka, and welcome to Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast, a podcast for gaining all the insider knowledge about the top recruiters in the tech industry. On this week's episode, we have Atirik Gautam with us, who is the Global Head Talent Acquisition at Sutherland. Over the years, Atirik has gained experience in recruitment automation and various aspects of global talent acquisition for R&D centers, technology, analytics, IoT, university relationship, and leadership recruiting. Also, he is an avid sports enthusiast, having turned from a state cricketer to an amateur golfer. Welcome to the podcast, Atirik. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Priyanka. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so how are you doing today?
Very well. Yeah, enjoying Friday. Almost the weekend is around. Happy to take 2 days off on a weekend and then restart Monday to Friday schedule. So yeah, a happy day for all of us.
Exactly. And, you know, like, I'm thrilled to have you here as well. So to start off, can you tell us a bit about, you know, yourself and your role at Sutherland?
Sure. You did cover a lot of it, but I always admit, and I like to really acknowledge Atirik as a sports enthusiast at heart and a spirited amateur golfer. So maybe I'm an accidental recruiter who got into HR and then made a career out of it. Professionally, I have been a thought partner and a strategy planner with 15 plus years of global talent experience. I spearhead the global talent acquisition team for digital engineering and technology. I'm delighted that I'm here today, and I would be happy to share my experience, knowledge in utilizing the best recruitment practices aided with technology.
Awesome. And so have you always like wanted to get into TA, or how did you come across this industry?
Yeah, I would say I cannot sing or dance or act. So what else I could do? Either be a recruiter or be part of the talk show. So yeah, no, I think it's a journey. It's been remarkable. Had the privilege to work with phenomenal leaders. And I think all the learnings clubbed together is what I am today. And I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. Didn't start with a choice. I'm a mechanical engineer, but there are a lot of people think where a non-technical role is the only thing that you can do. But I think industry is changing. And I think I became part of the change that happened years ago. And today, even after an engineering degree, I lead one of the largest people function in my company, and extremely delighted to do so.
That's amazing. And so what do you love about what you do, you know, that has made you stay in this industry for over 15 to 20 years now?
Yeah, this is the only role, I think, where you have unlimited opportunity to be creative at work. Nothing is same for us. So every day is a new change, new strategy. There are a lot of new challenges that we experience, but
yeah,
the power the role has, the entire fraternity of talent acquisition gives you the chance and the privilege to be the brand ambassador of the organization, be the first point of contact for aspirants and candidates. You are the face of the organization. And I think that's the most beautiful part of our job. And we love that. We take pride in calling ourselves the face of the organization, the brand ambassadors of the organization. And I think it has kept us excited. It has definitely kept me motivated and going. And I'm still enjoying my stint.
Yeah, I think you've greatly put that. And you've been, like you said, you've been a state cricketer and now you're a golfer. So I'm curious to know, like, when did your passion for the sport begin?
I think I grew up watching cricket. I was in my school cricket team. I represented my school in state tournaments. And then, you know, when you have validations, which is you're doing well, you're scoring well, you're getting awards. I used to feature frequently in the local newspapers. I think it was a strong validation of what you're doing is good. A lot of encouragement from people around you. Your friends were your critic, but also the supporters. And I think I continue to do so. I watched Rahul Dravid play for Indian cricket whom we call as the Wall, and he was in Bangalore. So one of the reasons why I left my native and came to Bangalore to do engineering, because they come from similar background, and I thought I could be one of them. I didn't, but I think the passion for sports drove me to different places, and I think majority of the learning that today I have in my leadership or my managerial style, a lot comes from the sports that I was passionate about as a youngster.
True. And, you know, I think in 2021, if I'm not wrong, I think you got the opportunity to be a speaker on the talk show with Economic Times as well. So how was your overall experience there?
Like I said, I cannot sing or dance, so what else I could do? So be in a talk show. It was an incredible talk show on air with live audience. It was a unique experience, and I really, really enjoyed it. 20 minutes of unfiltered exchange of knowledge about global talent strategies. I think never an easy spot when you're with the live audience. So it kept me really excited, but equally nervous at the time. The topics were very relevant. How do we use technology and talent acquisition, the role of data analytics, machine learning, artificial intelligence. I think a fresh perspective on the talent war because of the demand and supply gap. And I think it was a take on hiring for potential versus hiring for a specific job. Overall, it was a fantastic show.
Amazing. And, you know, I think around 2015 is when you transitioned from your managerial role to the leadership roles. And so how were things different, you know, and how did you like learn to adapt to your new responsibilities and the new chapter of your life?
Yeah, that's very interesting. And interestingly, I started my leadership role much before that. It was when I joined Wipro Technologies, and I was given a big team of close to 70, 80 recruiters along with 4 or 5 managers. So I think it started from there, the learning of global talent acquisition. It all commenced from there. But I learned something very early in my life, that the first rule of leadership is everything is your fault. And a leader must have the courage to act against the expert's advice. So if you have these attributes, you can contribute well. My transition had its own course of time and action, a lot of thinking and planning about how to be united as a group and add energy to the ecosystem with progressive leadership. However, it was still a relatively easy transition for me because being a sports enthusiast, I represented college and universities in various state tournaments. So I had my learning as a group leader. All I had to do was start implementing them. Like, how do you trust the team? How do you bring the best of the workforce and play your ace game together every day? I also had my own discoveries during the transition. A lot of unlearning was part of the process. The biblical wisdom to go by in leadership is to do unto others as would have them do unto you, which literally means treat others the way you want them to treat us.
So,
when I was a newbie, I didn't want to be like my managers. I knew a lot about what not to do as a leader. So I think that was an essential aspect of transition from being a manager to a mentor, then sharing knowledge, exchanging ideas, learning new stuff together, and then so on. So I think it was a journey that still continues where we attempt to motivate and inspire people.
Yeah, I think rightly said. And, you know, you've been a leader in the leadership role for like more than 10 years, I think. And so could you like share with us a few lessons, you know, you have learned being a leader, and what would be your advice for folks who want to take up leadership roles?
Yeah, the easy one is that there is no wax on and wax off for being an inspirational leader. But truth be told, you can't be a leader with no followers.
Yeah.
So if you want to travel along, then you need to travel together. Be a contributor and not a desecrator. Have an open mind for new ideas. Never hesitate to try or experiment, it will only make you more experienced. My personal favorite is always been pokayoke, which is a Japanese term for mistake proofing. It's my advice to all my colleagues and buddies that you can't avoid mistakes, but you can easily identify if one is about to happen. And that's what the Japanese term is all about. I think at last, I would say data analytics could be your closest buddy. And we all need to remember that leadership and learning are indispensable to each other.
Yeah, true. I think that's some really great advice. And, you know, you've been an avid supporter of tech as well. And you believe in the true power of technology to transform the business and people. So I'm curious to know, like, how has tech transformed your, you know, current hiring process at Sutherland and the global talent hiring process in the previous companies you've been with as well?
Sure. So a famous American director once said that technology is not something that we use, but we live technology. Once a new technology rolls over you, if you're not part of the steamroller, then you are part of the road and you are left behind. I think that's the power of technology. And let's not forget how technology helped all of us through the pandemic. How heavily we relied on technology for our personal and professional needs. Technology in recruitment is incredibly comprehensive and equally rewarding. It is the present and also the future. The most important aspect of technology is that it delivers the three critical aspects of recruitment, which is based on what I call as SEA, the C principle.
Okay.
It delivers speed. It delivers experience to the new applicants and enhances the accuracy. So we are no strangers to adopting bots, artificial intelligence, machine learning, or NLP to expedite the entire recruitment process. From resume parsing to ranking of CVs, the bots calling, gamified assessments, virtual tours, and on-the-go application tracking, I would say hashtag communication, and many more things that we have adopted to ensure that we stay relevant in the market. The essence is to deliver a global, world-class, and consistent experience to every applicant. Technology has come as the strongest ally in the unprecedented time like now.
True, very true. And I wanted to understand a bit about, you know, your current hiring process. So your areas of expertise is in global talent acquisition, and you've hired across, you know, USA, India, Europe, South America, EMEA, and APAC. So would like to know, how do you go about assessing the tech talent, you know, globally? What methods have worked well for you when it comes to judging and assessing the hard skills as well as the soft skills? Like, can you walk me through the process, you know, from source to hire?
Yeah, the biggest room in the world is a room for improvement. So we are not perfect. We are improving, but we are on the right track. For a successful stint in global hiring space, it is important to know the law of the land and be familiar with the territory. We call it GLOCAL, which is global hiring with local inputs, which fundamentally means that we have always relied on the knowledge and intel of the local recruitment team while preparing the global recruitment strategies. Overall, we strongly believe in consistent experience for every global talent. So we have built a robust and a unified process in the global talent attraction. When it comes to the candidate itself is the epicenter of the entire recruiting universe. The process is built around giving a wow experience to every candidate. On the other side, there are certain best practices that we have adopted, which is as follows, like fastest application time. You can take help of your application, and then if you have any FAQs that can be answered by the bots online. We heavily depend on technology with artificial intelligence, not only for sourcing, but also for screening and ranking. And we also rely on a lot of global assessment platforms to bring in accuracy in hiring. And I think the way we want to keep it very elevated is by bringing in certified interviewing panels who come and elevate the quality of conversation. So yeah, it's a 100% automated process, easy to apply, with a lot of focus and the epicenter, which is around giving a world-class experience to our candidates.
Absolutely. And so when it comes to, you know, hiring and assessing the tech talent for their technical skills, what do you think are like some of the key factors which companies often overlook?
Yeah, I often say that if you hire in haste, you can regret in peace, which fundamentally means that don't really rush hiring process and try to take quick decision based on 30 minutes of evaluation or one of the platform that can give you a very glorified heat map about the candidate's performance. So I think that's one of the biggest mistakes people make. I think it still runs in the industry. It is important that we believe that every applicant is important. So whether it's a selection or a rejection, that's fine. But how do you give a good quality experience to the candidate who's trying to make a switch? So I think a couple of these finer aspects are important, but we are now looking forward to a lot of evaluation, which never existed years ago. So we are moving from regular hard skills to what we call as intellectual competencies. And some of them are very, very unique and very new for industries. A lot of people have not even heard about it, but we are starting to go there. We are talking about looking at competencies like monotony tolerance. We are talking about task switching. We are talking about conformity. We are talking about even working memory and analytical thinking for people. So I think that's going to be the transformation, but we are still not there 100%, but we are on the right track.
True. And as the global head of talent acquisition, what are some of the key initiatives, you know, you have taken to create a futuristic recruitment process in Sutherland?
If we have to talk about start, stop, and continue, basically that's how we look at an existing process and improvement. Many of the best practices existed when I joined, and we could see there's a lot of good things happening while recruiting the digital and technology talent pool. What I started and really helped us was a robust workforce strategy, which was based on thoughtful predictive analysis. A lot of data that went into this predictive analysis, and then we use a lot of data scientists in-house to really build a model which can predict somewhere, if not 100%, but maybe close to a 60% or 70% accurate workforce need that we will have, which has the skill that we need to acquire, the skill we need to repeat, some of the lateral hiring that we must do. What are the skills that we can develop based on what is the skill gap between, you know, skill A versus a skill gap B, and then look at what's the timeline that we will be looking at it. So I think sensing the change versus reacting to change was the strategy that we adopted. A couple of things that we did to be ahead of the curve and on-time delivery was the, you know, streamline the process. When it comes to futuristic recruitment process, we created it with the induction of a world-class applicant tracking system, but we did not stop there. We snapped on with a market-leading talent intelligent platform, which is focused on, again, artificial intelligence and machine learning driven candidate sourcing and screening. And that also gives us access to close to 1 billion public profiles. By definition, a futuristic process is something that can stay relevant in the near future. We made a good start, and now we are reaping some of the benefits of the investments that we made in the right tool, the right technology, while attracting these top talents for our company.
That's great. And, you know, you touched upon skill gaps. And yeah, I think skill gaps is often a very major issue during, you know, global hiring. So how do you effectively manage skill gap? Any tips you can share with us?
Yeah. Hire less, build more, and borrow unlimited or as much as you can. So that's been my workforce strategy. That's something that I've been talking in various talk shows, that there will never be a time to acquire every skill from lateral market. You need to start investing in your own people. Yeah. That's where we were talking about the trust, get the ability. And there are a lot of data-driven predictive analysis that can make you intelligent about what kind of skill you might need 6 months from now, 12 months from now. So when it comes to skill gap, we know that not every skill we would know. So that's where we will hire. Okay. Once we hire and we understand the learning curve, we understand the timeline it takes to make somebody as intelligent as a lateral candidate, we bake in that time and start investing in our people. So we run something called as Academy of Excellence, which has thousands and thousands of courses which can make you intelligent. But what we go beyond that. We make learning a two-way street. We are very flexible with people who can go out and learn from the community and bring the learning back. While we have the best of the courses in the world that you can think of, which can get you from one technology to the other, or a snap-on technology, which is, for example, you're looking at Java, but you want to learn React Native, we can make you intelligent by using our in-house learning forums. So yes, we understand skill gap will never be zero. The way we want to mitigate and address it is that we will always and always try to build the intelligence in-house. And when we think that bringing them up the curve and investing in them will be a time-consuming activity, that's where we go and borrow some. So I'm sure for each of the skills, there are startups, there are the veterans who are doing this job as a freelancer, or the gig community, or anybody who's ready to do this job as a consultant. Don't shy away from bringing the intelligent for a short term and making our internal pool intelligent, and then go back to the same philosophy that hire less, build more, and borrow some.
I think that's really great. And, you know, really great initiatives as well. And I think you've hired, you know, across various countries as well. So how different is the tech hiring process in each of them? Is it like similar, or, and what are usually the hurdles you face? Is that also common?
Yeah, one thing which is non-negotiable in our strategy is that we don't want to have different process for different countries, and we don't give different experience to different geos. By consciously, we have tried to ensure that when you apply with us, doesn't matter where you are, you're applying for a work from home job or a brick and mortar concept, or if you're applying in Jamaica, or it's Bulgaria, or it's going to be India, your touch points, your process, the access to the tools, everything stays consistent. And that's why I said earlier that we believe in giving world-class and consistent experience to each of our applicants. By the way, I mean, if we look at the number of applicants we receive, we are talking about hundreds and thousands of it. The hiring for technology is slightly different only from the talent pool perspective. And I'm sure you're no stranger to the tech talent pool and the ability for different countries, okay? Right? There are progressive countries where technology is part of their curriculum. So people are tech savvy. They know computer like back of their hand. So they pick up some of the skills really fast. This is when we go to, you know, certain locations where technology is not the primary skill. For example, when we hire people in Colombia, when we hire people in Jamaica, they are good candidates, but the work they do is slightly different, because some of these places we don't have the the world's largest bank, their data center. We don't have a technology hub there. So yes, sometimes we lift and shift. That's another strategy, that if we already have somebody in a progressive country and he is an expert and we cannot find the local talent, so we also lift and shift and give people opportunity to go through a global mobility process, experience that, and then we make it part of the pack that once they go there, they become part of the evaluation and they also start attracting some of the technology talent. But yeah, I think some of the variances we can experience, but when it comes to the process, we have a very unified and a standard global process.
Awesome. And you know, the pandemic has brought in a lot of change. It's changed the way we work and how employers attract and retain the talent. So in your opinion, how has life changed for, you know, the HR teams, and how have the recruitment trends as well changed pre and post pandemic and the, you know, downturn as well? And where do you see the trends going, you know, in the next, say, 2 to 5 years?
It's true. It's true. A lot has changed post the pandemic. Proximity became a luxury, which was assumed before the pandemic. Work from home and then change to work from anywhere. And now it is not even a flexibility. It's a global trend. So everybody had to adapt and make quick but also sustainable changes, especially for critical activities like recruitment, where we deal with only and only external candidates most of the time. One of the biggest changes which we experienced was virtual assessment. And it always existed. Not every time we called a candidate to our office for the interview, we always did a telephonic assessment. We sometimes used different virtual platform to conduct digital interviews. But then we realized that this is the only way we can hire. So people started trusting virtual interview more than they ever did. A new talent war started, right? As remote operation gave instant boost to more job opportunities. So people can sit anywhere and apply for any job. And you understand, a couple of years ago, especially pre-pandemic, if you're in a metro, you really don't want to go to a tier two city or vice versa. And even within metro, if you are in Chennai, you really did not like to move even to a Mumbai or a Bangalore or a Hyderabad. But then the ocean of opportunities for everybody to apply anywhere and work from anywhere. Online assessment platforms became more useful than ever. And that's why you would see in the last 3 years, more and more programs are startups around the same topic of how you can evaluate people, the proctoring method, how do you ensure that there are genuine tests taken, how do you evaluate more competencies by giving the same test. So yeah, it became a trend and things changed, and it's never going to go back to how it was before the pandemic. With economic turndown, I think the revision of compensation and benefits, especially the benefits, was inevitable. But it was a difficult task, because a perfect balance was to be attempted. One, to retain the employees while simultaneously also attracting new talent. So it was a marathon for our people functions, especially the human resources. Now, as far as the recruitment trends, what we predict for next couple of years, it will definitely be driven by advanced technology. There is no doubt about it. All the repeated tasks, and I can quote that again, that all the repeated tasks in hiring will be automated. We have seen it happening today. So the task like sourcing, the smart Boolean search, crawling on the net to find the right profile, scheduling, which was an activity. We had people around doing that, finding the right time on the calendar, blocking it. Activities like, you are shortlisted, these are the list of documents that I want from you. You know, pre-screening calling, somebody's following up, setting up a telephonic interview. All these tasks are repeated, and scientifically we know this can be automated. The post and pray is gone, right? It has almost disappeared. So the overall new strategy will be inbound recruitment, which means be there at the right place at the right time and let everybody know the quality of work you do. And then people follow you and come back and apply with you. So that's inbound strategy. Organization will be more interested in candidates with enhanced cognitive abilities. That's something which is in the making, but I definitely see that becoming a very, very critical aspect of recruitment, where you might be good with a programming skill, which is your first primary job. You might be extremely good with your financial knowledge, which is your job profile. But if you don't exhibit certain cognitive abilities, or what we call as the intelligent competencies, that might be one of the eliminators for you. So I definitely see these aspects becoming very, very prominent. The evaluation will become more exhaustive, because less of meeting and more of platforms is what we can definitely predict. So it will be focused on, like I said, intelligent competencies like monotony tolerance or task switching or working memory. And all these things are already happening. It's just not, it is a trend, but we definitely see skill gap to continue, technology to dominate, and we would definitely see a very, very stringent evaluation going forward for each of the roles. And I think the social recruitment will become very prominent, which means it's not only about getting your profile from the social platform. It will also be looking at your social profile online before a decision is made. For example, on LinkedIn, you might be a professional programmer, but when we look at your Facebook profile, you are an ardent traveler. Your hobbies like gaming, you might be a traveler, you might be a blogger. And we are going to mix these two aspects to see that, are you the right match for the role? What if the role is very straightforward, 9 to 6, back-end, and it's just a system-based output that you're supposed to deliver. But when we look at your social profiling, you seem to be an outgoing, interesting, partying kind of guy. We might not reject your application, but we would still have a good conversation before we decide that this is the right job for you and you decide this is the right place for you. Is that, do we really converge? I think the things that will change in future is that the organization will offer you different alternatives. So you might apply for a job A in the organization. When we finish the evaluation, we wouldn't let you go. We would say, you know what, we believe you are more suited for a job Z. These are the interesting aspects why we think you are more suitable. And to make that transition and decision is where we would be using your social profiling a lot. So I think it sounds scary, but it also is exciting that some of the actions that you take online can also be a very important aspect of your job future. We are prepared for it. We are experimenting with it in some way or the other. But for the candidates, I think that's something that they need to watch, be prepared. Yep. And it's going to be useful for them also, because, you know, no longer the punch tag, right? Caught in the wrong profession, because you know exactly the kind of job that you're going to, you know, go ahead and take. And we as an organization, we carry that, I think, the ethics. And also we want to be very honest with each of the hiring that, yes, this is the job and we believe this is the best suited for you.
Yeah, I think you've shared some really amazing insights. And, you know, like you mentioned, you know, since the pandemic and post the pandemic, more and more folks are starting to use, you know, technology, and more tools are out there available. But what do you think is that, or the areas which is there a scope for improvement for the tools out there?
That's an interesting question. I think, like we said, nothing is perfect, but I think the intent is in the right direction, which is progressive. Most of the tools, and I can tell you today, is only and only focused on the hard skill that you bring on the table. For example, if you're a programmer, you're a coder, you are a financial expert, you are expert in F&A operations, or if you are into a, you know, marketing job or a business development, we have always, and most of the tools we have today is primarily focused on identifying your primary skill. Now, the limitation with the tools we have today that it only tells you how good you are in your core skills, but it does not identify and tell you how good you be and how good you can be if there is a minor change tomorrow in your job profile. Which means the tools of today cannot identify the transferable skills. The tools of today cannot identify the potential of a candidate to unlearn or upgrade. Tools of today cannot identify the limitation you might have to pick up a new technology. And if you observe, these are going to be the futuristic skills, because I don't think so any organization will be in a position to offer you one job which you start and you retire with the same role, right? So there are a lot of competencies that has to be enhanced, but there has to be in the journey a process for also to upgrade your skill. Sometime even unlearn something that you know and learn a new skill altogether. So I think the limitations today we have is that we are still trying to attempt, but our focus is still on primary skills. And then when you take somebody on board, is the responsibility of the organization to nurture their career. And after a few months or a year, when the job changes or the org structure changes or the job profile itself changes because of the change in technology, a lot of them perish. They never thought that they had to do it. And, you know, like technology has the shelf life of a banana. Time you buy it and procure it and use it, it's already obsolete. So I think we need certain smart tools which can also give us at least, if not a complete heat map of the candidate, but at least an indicator of how good this person could be if tomorrow the technology changes and he has to pick up a new technology all the way, or if he has to upgrade from technology A to a technology B. And I think that's something that we are working. I know the industry experts are trying their best to use the latest technology to create some gamified assessments. I do a lot of gamified assessment with some of my friends who own the product, where we let the candidate play a game online. Could be as easy as a Pac-Man or a Mario. And every action that you take is based on the decisions that you make, right? Which route is best, right? You take a left or a right. And if you take left and you reach a dead end, how do you go back and repeat the task? Do you make the same mistake again and again and 5-6 times till you realize that, hey, this is not the right route? Do you live up to the challenges? How good are you in repeated tasks? All these aspects are something very new, or we are experimenting with it, the results. But I think that's going to be very important. That's an area where we need to improve. And I think at the moment, the limitation and shortcoming of the platforms that we are using.
Yeah, I think that's some really valuable feedback. Thank you so much for sharing that. And so before we wrap up our conversation, I wanted to ask you, Atrek, so your experience in the industry, you know, goes back to nearly 2 decades. So can you tell us a bit about how the industry has changed, you know, over time in terms of practices or the talent market, you know, all of it, like from when you started out to today?
Yeah, a lot has changed. And my learning over the years has been the first and the most important, that for an aspirant, the experience of the interview process is more important than selection or rejection. The second learning is that to shape the career trajectory, it is imperative to be at the right place at the right time. And that applies to the candidates who are seeking job, and that also applies to organizations who are planning to attract top talent. Be at the right place at the right time, which means the right forum, right visibility, okay? And people understand that there is an intent for you to hire and for others to know that you're open to have a conversation. For organization, I think the biggest learning I had and I have seen in the last many years is that organization should cultivate a learning culture and grow talent internally. So that's been some of the learnings when it comes to what we experience in leadership. But to sum up the key changes we can predict in the industry, which is something that we keep doing so that we are prepared for the future, is that time will be a luxury for everybody. So if you are not hiring, someone else will. And something that we will have to remember and also prepare. There will be a dynamic shift from hire for a job to hire for potential.
Yeah.
And a transmuted focus on transferable skills, which I explained earlier, more than the actual primary skill, what we call as the hard skill. Acquiring early talent, grooming them for the work and the near future demand, that will become a very critical aspect for an organizational success. And I think the affinity with technology and to amplify the quality of hire and assessment, I think that's something that we should be prepared to do. Like we say, for the future, a lot depends on what we do in present. And as we all know, the best way to predict the future is to create one.
True. Very true. Amazing. And that brings us to the end of our conversation. I had a wonderful time chatting with you, Atirek, and I love the insights and the tips you have shared with us today. So thank you again for joining Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast. We hope you enjoyed as well as learned from it. To gain more such insights, join us for our next episode. You can follow us on LinkedIn at Technical Hiring Showcase page and our website technical-hiring.com to receive all the updates. That's all for this episode, folks. See you next time.